lest they see what they shouldn't from oppressed babies to thighs. I throw stones at my tongue cause shit should really keep its peace. I throw stones at my feet cause the straying lead to defeat. Couple of big ones at my heart cause the thing is freezing cold. But my nub's still alive and kicking, unstoppable on the road. I throw bricks at the devil so I'll be sure to hit him. But first at the man in the mirror so I can chase out the venom.
Little boy, shining ahead. Just another kiss and out to get some bread. Not the first murder, nor the last. Again and again a repetition of the past.
Since the very first day, same story.
Young ones, old ones, some glory. How can it be? Has the whole world turned blind? Or is it just cause it's only affecting my kind? If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say? For me, this path that I walk on, there's only one way.
Bullets may kill, bones may break. Instead of those stones, like David, I say.
Bullets may kill, bones may break. Instead of those stones, like David, I say.
Try not to cry,
stand by you.
Yeah.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله. لا إله إلا الله.
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو إذا الرحمن.
Allah
هو إذا المنان.
لا إله إلا.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. You might find it Q&A on Islamic Beliefs in our website, iranradio.ir. I am Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have Sheikh Karimi to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
So, how is constant expectation of Imam al-Mahdi's reappearance reconciled with the belief in five definitive signs? Shaykh Karimi, would you explain on this question for us?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yeah, this is a very, technical question, and I would like our dear listeners to pay attention to this discussion today. Because, alhamdulillah, as Shia, we are waiting for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. This is the concept accepted by all Muslims. All Muslims are expecting for the Mahdi, and all the followers of divine religions, they are expecting for the Savior. Now, when it comes to the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, again, you see that from time to time we see some false claimants, mm-hmm. and unfortunately some lay people following those false claimants of Mahdism.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that everything that we need in the time of the major occultation or Al-Ghibatul Kubra is explained in the narrations.
All right.
Now, one of the points which is of great significance is about the signs of reappearance, Halaimul Zuhur. And we know that according to the narrations, the signs of the narrations are divided into two categories, definite ones and indefinite ones. What is the difference? I will explain. So we know that one of the Islamic concepts in Kalam, in theology, is called Bada.
All right.
Some people have attributed only to the Shia, but the point is that it is something rooted in the verses of the Quran. Mm-hmm. So Bada is an Islamic concept.
Yes.
So it means that in some cases, God reveals to people something other than what they thought would happen.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, people at the time of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, they thought that his elder son Ismail is the next Imam.
Okay.
But later Bada happened, meaning that God revealed to people something that they didn't think that it would happen. Ismail died,
mm-hmm.
and Imam Kazim alayhi salam became the Imam.
All right.
Or for example, it's been recorded in the tablet of Mahw al-Ithbat that you are going to live, for example, for 40 years.
All right.
Then you do something good, your life span increases.
Mm-hmm.
This is called Bada, which is
right.
accepted by all Muslims.
Okay.
Now, the question is that when it comes to the signs of the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam mentioned in the narrations, will Bada happen regarding these signs or not? For example, we have
First of all, what are the signs?
I will mention.
The five signs, that's right. Okay.
Before going to those five signs, the question is that will Bada happen to a sign or not? For example, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, for example, says that one of the signs of the reappearance is a flood in Euphrates, for example.
All right.
So if Bada happens, means that Imam Mahdi alayhi salam reappeared without that sign happening
mm-hmm.
at all.
All right.
Okay?
That's right.
So that is why we have in the narrations that there are two categories of the signs, definite ones and indefinite ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is exactly related to the concept of Bada.
So Bada is full stop of the event which is going to take place?
It may happen.
It may happen or it could be changed?
The details might change.
Might change indeed. That's
for example,
right.
flood in Euphrates, then it might be flood in Tigris, for example.
That's right.
Or the month which is mentioned in the narration may change.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
All right.
So that is why the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam themselves, they have divided these signs into two categories. Alaim mahtumat, the definite signs, and alaim ghayru mahtumat, the indefinite signs. And which means that when it comes to definite signs, then bada or change will not happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that is the importance of people coming to know about these five signs, definite signs. According to Shia scholars and the famous narrations of the Ahlul Bayt, for example, when Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, قَبْلَ قِيَامِ الْقَائِمِ خَمْسُ عَلَامَاتٍ مَحْتُمَاتٍ. Before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, there would be five definite signs, meaning that for sure these signs will happen before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
Mm-hmm.
What are they? The uprising of Yamani, the uprising of Sufyani, Sayha, the heavenly call, Qatl al-Nafs al-Zakiyya, the murder of a person called Nafs al-Zakiyya, and Al-Khasfa wal-Bayda, a group of the army of Sufyani will be swallowed up in a land called Bayda in the Arabian Peninsula. When it comes to indefinite signs, there are many mentioned in the narrations, for example, a solar eclipse in the middle of the month of Ramadan, the murder of a king called Abdullah, a lunar eclipse toward the end of the month of Ramadan, the kind of damage in Basra, the damage of the wall of the Kufa Mosque, the struggle between three groups in Sham, Syria, the Euphrates flood, and, for example, a war between Armenia and Azerbaijan, and so on and so forth.
All right.
We have talked about these signs in other programs and other sessions, so I'm not going to go to that topic. So the question now is that, as I mentioned, will Bada happen to definite signs mm-hmm. or not? The famous idea among the Shia scholars is that when the Imams of the Ahl Bayt alayhi salam themselves, they have mentioned that we have two categories of the signs, Mahtumat and Ghayru Mahtumat, it means that then Bada will not happen regarding the Mahtumat,
mm-hmm.
regarding the definite signs. So, for example, if Sufyani is considered as a definite sign for Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, then for sure it will happen before the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. For Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam said, "In the khuruj al-Sufyani min al-amr al-mahtum." The uprising of Sufyani is mahtum, is definite, for sure it will happen. Or qatlu nafs al-zakiyya min al-mahtum. This is the viewpoint of, the majority of the Shia scholars.
Right.
And they argue that the very fact that we have two categories of the signs, refer to the fact that there is no bada in the definite signs. The other idea is that no, still we might have bada even in definite signs. Some Shia scholars believe in this. Now, going back to the main question, okay, we have these narrations referring to the fact that before the coming of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, we have five definite signs.
Yes.
Okay. Without them, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam will not come. On the other hand, we have the narrations, for example, Tawakkul Faraja Sabahan wa Masa'an. Wait for the reappearance in the morning, in the evening. Meaning that, and other narrations refer to the fact that Imam Mahdi alayhi salam will come in a time that people may not expect the Imam to come. That is why each time we need to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is that it seems that these two are contradicting. We have definite signs, which means that Imam will not come before their happening. On the other hand, the fact that Zuhur may happen at any time.
And the signs are, we can say that you are referring to, some of them are very much the same as everyday natural disasters that are taking place.
Yeah, that is why, one of the questions
we cannot, at the end of the day, we can say, understand and recognize, is this the very same
that's
sign?
That's a very good point that you mentioned, and we have discussed in the last Savior about the criteria for applying applying the signs to today's events, and we have discussed about those criteria. And I believe that when it comes to the five different signs that I mentioned, the issue is very clear. The uprising of a person called Yamani with all the features, and then Sufyani, As-Sayha, the heavenly call, which is a miracle, all these can lead the people. So there is no need for people to go to indefinite signs and applying them. When it comes to definite signs, they would help. Now, going back to the main question, are these two contradicting each other? First of all, as I mentioned, some Shia scholars, they believe that bada may happen also in the definite sign. So if you agree with this, then there is no contradiction, which means that even for definite signs, bada may happen, Imam may come without those five signs to happen. Which means that, there is no contradiction. Anytime Imam Mahdi alayhi salam may reappear.
All right.
But if we go with the famous idea that there is no bada in the different signs, how can we solve these two issues? The point is that what is mentioned in the narrations as, the coming of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam at any time, and the fact that Tawakkul Faraja Sabahan wa Masa'an, this is referring to the process of reappearance, not the very coming of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
That's right.
Okay? And this process, will last at most, maybe less than 10 months, less than 1 year. Realization of all these different signs and the coming of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, they are interconnected and will happen very close to each other, right?
So in a short span, all of them will be together,
exactly,
so that the recognition of the true time of reappearance will
that's
be clear
the point
for the people. That's right.
So when the narrations talk about the fact that these the concept of Faraj may happen at any time, and you may expect that in the morning, in the evening, it is referring to the process of reappearance, and this process includes those definite signs.
All right.
Okay? So which means that at any time, people may see Yamani, Sufyani, and at the beginning of this process, And within a short span, within few months, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam will come.
Okay,
so there is no contradiction. This is one point, one answer given to this. And the other point is that the narration is talking about tawakkau, expect, the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is referring to the eagerness of the people, not the point that Imam Mahdi alayhi salam may come in this very morning. It means that each and every time show your
interest. That's right.
Yeah,
okay.
That you are interested in the coming of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. Mm-hmm. You are preparing yourself. Mm-hmm. So it is a kind of metaphor. I mean, sometimes, for example, your beloved is in a journey. You know that he or she will come back to you after 1 year. Okay, right. Although you know that, but every morning you are waiting for him or for her coming back to you. And this is showing your love for him or for her, right?
All right.
The same can be mentioned regarding these narrations of tawakka wal faraja sabahan wa masa'an. It means that wait for the coming of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. Although you know that it might happen within a few months from now, but show your love, show your interest, and wait for the coming of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, which is, also a factor for people getting prepared for the coming of Imam Mahdi.
Okay.
So these are two main answers given to this very good question.
All right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration regarding this concept. It was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
How is constant expectation of Imam al-Mahdi's reappearance reconciled with the belief in five definitive signs? It was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. With me, Atal, the host of the program, and Sheikh Karimi. For more information, and also to download for free our other episodes, visit our website, iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is Iran Radio, and we have some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. Considered to be a verbal revelation by Allah, this is the actual word of Allah. The Quran is the holiest book for Muslims. Literally meaning the recitation, the Quran is widely regarded as the finest work in classical Arabic literature. Although the entire holy book plays a significant role in the daily rituals of its followers, the first surah, known as chapter Al-Fatiha, is the most recited of the Holy Quran. This chapter, which consists of 7 verses, is repeated in daily prayers of Muslims and on other occasions too. Now we listen to the translation of this holy chapter. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Praised be Allah, Lord of the two worlds, this world and the hereafter, the beneficent, the merciful, and master of the day of judgment. You alone we do worship, and from you alone we do seek assistance. Guide us to the right path, the path of those to whom you have granted blessings, those who are neither subject to your anger nor have gone astray. From the vibrant pulse of Tehran to wherever you're listening to, a heartfelt hello and salam. This is Iran Radio, and we are here to bring you a day filled with meaning, discovery, and connection. Our next program is Islamic Laws, Clarifying Faith for Everyday Life. This program focuses on Islamic jurisprudential rulings based on the fatwas of the prominent scholars or maraji. Each episode addresses practical religious questions and explores common issues that arise in daily life. Then we have another segment of our radio productions. Next up, for those looking to deepen their connection with the Holy Quran, Insights into the Holy Quran Unveils Divine Wisdom. Islamic Laws is next on deck. Don't go anywhere.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way? All covered up in a world that gives it all away. Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We are dealing with some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. And let me begin our episode with this question. You know, it's very important, actually, to name the child,
right?
And we have so many, I think, traditions or, let's say, suggestions recommended to the parents to name the child even before they were born, right?
Yes.
So let me ask you the question from the Islamic perspective, especially I'm talking about the jurisprudential aspect and dimension. So what does Ayatollah Khamenei say about naming the children?
Well, it is the duty of the parents to choose a good name for their child.
Mm.
Not a name that will have negative impact on the child's psyche. Okay, the names of the Ahlul Bayt, like for example, Muhammad is a good name to choose. Ali, for example, Hassan, Hussein, and Mahdi. Okay, these are some of the best names. And the names of all the Imams are good names to choose for the child.
And it's not also fortunate that in the Western world you see the names of Muhammad and Ali becoming actually so frequent.
Yeah, of course.
It's one. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's Muhammad is the first prevalent name in the West.
Yeah, of course. Because both Sunnis and Shias use the same name.
Yes.
Okay. When it comes to the names of the Ahlul Bayt, of course, the Shia Muslims, mostly.
Yeah. Prefer.
Prefer to use their names, and of course, there are some parents, unfortunately, who choose such names that do not give any sense, any meaning. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That does not make any sense.
I see.
So ultimately, the aftermath of the such names is that the child finds himself in a position where he cannot identify himself. Something. Okay. What is the meaning of your name? He does not. He cannot give a meaning for his name. So, and sometimes the names are so bad that they have definitely negative effect on the child. So it is very much recommended by the Imams and the Infallibles and also by the religious authorities to choose a good name for their child.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, there's another question I would like to ask you, Sheikh, and that is about taking away or walking away with some stuff from the mosque, For example, whether it be muhr or rosary, beads, or any even utensils from the mosque. For example, we know that, you know, because of different ceremonies and ritual services, usually there is a kitchen inside the mosque and they would distribute or hand out, for example, some tea or coffee with some containers, saucers, you know, cups and whatnot, you know. Yeah. So if somebody takes some of them or walks away with some of these stuff from the mosque, what do we have from the jurisprudential aspect for this?
Well, generally speaking, it's not permissible for any individual to misuse or take away with them the belongings of the mosque, the things which belong to the mosque.
Right.
Whether they are the turba, the piece of clay,
right,
or the rosaries, or the carpets, or any other items belonging to the mosque. For example, if the mosque has certain gadgets, and those gadgets are not used even by the mosque, yes, but they still belong to the mosque, people have no right just to bring up this excuse and say, okay, the mosque does not need it any longer, so I want to use them. That's not acceptable.
I see.
It belongs to the they belong to the mosque, and they can be sold, and the proceeds can be used to benefit the mosque.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Mama Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, what are the general jurisprudential laws or Islamic laws regarding loans? If you want to take out a loan or borrow some money from someone, or even you know, lend some money or some loan to someone, what are the general laws?
Well, the answer, the question is very general, because you say, okay, what is the Islamic law about loans? Okay, there are different scenarios. It depends whether you borrow from an Islamic bank or a non-Islamic bank, okay, or whether you give money, okay.
If and does it differ from a bank or a national or, let's say, a local
a private, yeah.
Private sector, yeah. Or rather than an individual, simple, single person.
Yeah, governmental and private, right?
Yes.
So the general answer is that it is not permissible to give and receive usury. And if there is such a stipulation in the contract of loan, allowing you to give or requiring you to give interest or receive interest, that transaction is invalid. Now, for example, if you want to deposit your money on the condition that the bank gives you a certain amount of money, this condition is forbidden. It cannot be, it will make the interest or the usury haram to use.
What about the inflation rate? And every country is actually suffering from some kind of inflation. And when you give some kind of a loan, then the value of your money actually decreases as the time passes by.
Well, you know, if there's no such stipulation, and you just deposit your money with the bank, there's no such thing as expressing or placing a condition.
Right.
And the bank itself, just to encourage the clients and customers, give a certain amount of incentive or something amount of money to just to motivate people to put their money or assets in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
They give certain amount of money or whatever the justification or the reason.
Right.
There's no problem in receiving that amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And which is received without a prior condition.
Right.
Yeah, that's okay. That's permissible. Even according to, let's say Ayatollah Sistani, he says that it depends on whether it's a government. Suppose we are investing in a Muslim country,
right?
And there are Muslim banks. Okay, mm-hmm. If you deposit with your money with a government bank, okay, you can receive half of the interest and distribute, and you should give away the other half to the poor, the poor. And if you deposit the money with a private bank,
right,
then if you do not make such a stipulation for interest, the you can collect all the interest that is given to you by the bank, because you did not put any condition in the first place.
Right.
So it's okay to receive that interest.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tawid. Let's take another break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Mama Jad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Tawid, what is the law regarding fasting without eating anything at dawn, like what we call sahari, or a kind of breakfast, basically, starting the whole spiritual journey of fasting?
Right. Well, the pre-dawn meal is not necessary to eat, but it is recommended.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you need to stay stay healthy during the day.
Right.
And if you, for example, let's say the weather is hot, you might suffer dehydration.
Right.
Or maybe because of hunger, you might have developed some kind of complications.
Right.
So because of this, it's recommended to wake up before dawn and have a short meal, and then make niyyah for fasting. That's not necessary, but it is recommended.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everybody understands this, that it's not necessary for them to wake up. But if they do wake up, it's better, it's good, it's okay, it is good for his health.
Sahab,
yes, of course.
If I get you right, correct me if I'm wrong, we know that, you know, eating breakfast, starting fasting is recommended, but, you know, iftari, which is usually eaten as, you know, the azan of Maghrib is on, you know, or finished, then, well, you have to actually end your fasting. And this is obligatory, right?
It's not obligatory. It's not obligatory to break your fast at a certain time, you know?
Oh.
It's not obligatory.
But you cannot actually, finish your fasting.
Okay. You can finish your fasting by just saying that I am no longer fasting because it's time for breakfast. When it's time for prayer, your fast is already over, whether you want it or not. Okay, you cannot keep fasting. Okay, you just simply say, okay, it's time for prayer. Okay, you pray and then you break your fast, but it's not wajib to break it.
But we cannot continue our fasting to the next fasting day.
Even if it does happen,
right, that if you don't eat anything in between the breakfast, I mean like iftari, and the next sahari, the next for the next fasting
again, you should continue fasting if you can, you know. For example, if you remain asleep.
Isn't there any, like, obligatory, basically, to eat something in the middle, like
during the night? No, it's not obligatory. You know, for example, if you happen to sleep in the evening before dawn, before you break your fast.
Right.
Okay, you remain asleep for some reason until dawn. You find yourself in the, you waking up in the morning.
Right.
Now, can you break your fast? No, you cannot break your fast because you should keep fasting if you can.
Uh-huh.
But la yukallifullahu nafsan illa wus'aha. God does not obligate you beyond your capacity.
Right.
If you cannot keep fasting, and fasting could be very much injurious to your health, then you should break your fast. And breaking means doesn't mean that you should overeat. Eat as much as you can. You should eat as much as it can, as it helps you stay and, you know, in a good shape and also healthy till the next breakfast.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Thank you, my dear listeners, for joining your own program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to delve into some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. From me, Muhammad Javad, the host of this program, and our guest speaker, Sheikh Javid, we bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
لا إله إلا هو الوحيد القدير. people that wanted to visit the city of Shiraz would go through the Quran gate. But nowadays, with the volume of cars, only people pass. Join me as I visit the city of Shiraz.
The Quran gate is the first thing you'll notice as you enter the city from the north, as two old copies of Islam's holy book was kept here in the past. Just at the entrance of the city also lies the statue of Haju Kermani, a poet and mystic from the 14th century. His poems are mostly about spirituality. His works are believed to have influenced another Iranian poet called Hafiz, which we'll get to later in this program. Haju Kermani traveled to many lands during his time, but that stopped when he came to Shiraz.
The city of Shiraz is known for its poets and poetry. Many renowned Iranian poets lived here. Haju Kermani, when he visited the city of Shiraz, he never left.
This is likely because the rulers of this land valued arts.
The Arg of Karim Khan is a citadel built during the 18th century as the living headquarters of Karim Khan Azand himself. Later it was a prison, and now it's a museum, which we can enter.
Karim Khan Azand founded the Zand dynasty and declared Shiraz his capital, and thus many buildings were erected in this city during his rule.
The architecture of the citadel combines military and residential architecture, as was the home of Karim Khan Azand and also the head of his military headquarters.
But Karim Khan was different from other rulers of the time. When he came to power, he refused to be called king. He accepted the title the Advocate of the People, that is Vakil in Persian. Many structures built during his time carry Vakil in their name. Stained glass goes hand in hand with Iranian architecture. From homes to palaces, most windows were decorated this way. But it wasn't just for beauty.
The interesting thing about tinted glass is it's first soothing for the environment and for the eyes, and also it keeps the insects away, they say. I don't see any insects here, do you?
Next stop is the Vakil Bathhouse, a place where people from all walks of life would chit-chat and also bathe. At the entry, every part of the society had their own section, and many of the people's problems were resolved just here. It was like the city's or the town's informal council. And about the building itself,
and even in this building, which is a bathhouse, there's lots of detail put in the architecture. So this shows you how much Iranians valued every single building, even a bathhouse.
Walking through this bath, I saw wall after wall of detail put in the making. And it's quite big for a place to bathe. But this also shows this place was more like a hangout or a place they would spend hours in. Not just a quick shower like we do today. And may I remind you, they didn't shower every day in the old days.
This place was way more than a bathhouse. Like for example, one person's having a scrub, the other's having a massage, and of course, one of them is bathing. And on the other side, there's one person getting a haircut, a shave, and that guy there got his tooth pulled out.
The Vakil Mosque is another landmark of Shiraz. The 48 columns in its prayer hall, carved in spirals, are one of its outstanding features. Next is Bazar Vakil, a big market still in use today to find everything from Shiraz and beyond. From spices and herbs to sweets and confectionery, and many, many more, this is the place to visit. You can find every kind of souvenir here, many cool things you can buy, and every quarter has its own goods. One unique part in this bazaar is where several hallways meet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, many of Iran's bazaars are similar in shape. But the difference for the bazaar in Shiraz is this little part here is called the Saray-e Murshid, where you can get your hands on many little things, like little antiques, little jewelry, or little souvenirs where you can take home.
Talking about cool things, there was also an antique shop that topped my list. The Vakil Bazaar is one of the longest stretching and most famous bazaars in Iran. It is located in the center of Shiraz and is amongst Iran's national heritage sites. Saadi, another one of the renowned poets of this land. He was born in Shiraz. He spent more than two decades traveling outside of Persia following the Mongol invasion. His works reflect upon the lives of ordinary people suffering displacement, agony, and conflict. His best-known works, Bustan, meaning the orchard, and Golestan, the rose garden, consist of stories illustrating the standard virtues recommended to Muslims, being justice, kindness, modesty, and gratification.
Saadi is one of the most famous Iranian poets of all time. His poetry is seen all over the world, not just in Iran. One of the verses that is seen in the UN building in New York is, "All men and women are to each other the limbs of a single body, each of us drawn from life's shimmering essence, God's perfect pearl. And when this life we share wounds one of us, all share the hurt as if it were our own. You who will not feel another's pain, you forfeit the right to be called human." This was just one.
And talking about flowers and gardens, the city of Shiraz is also famous for its Persian gardens. And in spring, the scent of flowers fills the sky in this city. The whole city is like a big flower shop. And last but not least is Persian poet Hafiz. He was a spiritual poet and mystic known by his pen name Hafiz. It means a person that knows the Quran by heart. It is believed that he also knew the works of Saadi, Rumi, and several other poets by heart too. His mausoleum located in a garden is where people gather to recite his poems, relax, and enjoy the environment. It's a popular hangout for artists in Shiraz.
Hafiz, one of the most prominent Iranian poets of all time. While he passed away several centuries ago, still you can find his poems in the homes of Iranians today. So this shows you how important he was in Persian literature. Some regard him as the pinnacle of Persian literature.
And a goodbye from Shiraz. I'm Pedram Khaledadi for the Iran program.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you, and in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the contents of Surah Al-Ankabut, or Chapter Spider, the 29th chapter of the Holy Quran. Brothers and sisters, we have reached the 33rd verse of Surah Al-Ankabut. So, let's listen to the verse, and we will be back with our discussion.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
ولما أن جاءت رسلنا لوطا سيئ بهم وضاق بهم ذرعا وقالوا لا تخف ولا تحزن إِنَّا مُنَجُّوكَ وَأَهْلَكَ إِلَّا امْرَأَتَكَ كَانَتْ مِنَ الْغَابِرِينَ
And when our messengers came to Lot, he was distressed for them and felt for them great discomfort. They said, Fear not, nor grieve. Indeed, we will save you and your family, except your wife. She is to be of those who remain behind.
So, as we said earlier, brothers and sisters, the story of Prophet Lut and his people continues. It started with the indecency and lewdness of the people, and this prophet warned them. He said, "Innakum lata'tuna ar-rijal," you are actually approaching the males, and what is wrong with you? They did not accept. They actually did not accept the invitation to monotheism and actually did not want to let go of their misbehaviors and bad actions. So there were some messengers out of the angels of the Almighty Allah that came to Prophet Abraham, and upon giving him the good news, which was being granted a son from the Almighty Allah, they said that, "Inna muhliku ahli hadhihi al-qariya," we are going to destroy the actually people of this town. So Prophet Abraham, because he wanted to his heart to calm down, he asked about the situation of Lut, and they said that he will be saved, of course, illa imra'atah, except his wife. So now the verse, in this verse, in the 33rd verse, the story also continues. وَلَمَّا أَنْجَأَتْ رُسُولُنَا لُوطًا سِيئَ بِهِمْ وَضَاقَ بِهِمْ ذَرَعَ These actually guests of the Almighty Allah, these messengers, these angels came to Prophet Lut as well. So thereupon he was afraid. He was distressed. He was distressed. And why was that? His anxiety was not for that he did not know them. His anxiety was because of the polluted environment they were entering. So he was afraid of what would happen to his guests, his honorable guests, and because he knew what these shameless people of his might do before these honorable guests. So that's why the verse says, si'a bihim. The Quranic word si'a is derived from sa'a in the sense of to become grievous. And the Arabic word actually dhara means the heart or temper. So the Quranic phrase ذاق بهم ذرعا means that he became grievous and inconvenient. So, regarding it, also, some of the Islamic commentators have said that this phrase actually originally means that the distance between the front legs of a camel at the same time of walking are to be looked at. So it means that dharra is the distance between the legs of the camel. And since when a heavy load is put on its back, it decreases the distance of the steps, lesser and narrower, this sentence, laqa bihim dharra, is mentioned as ironically for a heavy and laborious event. So the point is that when the angels and those guests found his inconvenience soon, they introduced themselves, they actually removed his anxiety, and they told him those shameless people could not do anything, and all of them would be annihilated very soon. So, dear listeners, as you were with us, after Prophet Lut expressed his worry about the fate of these guests he was having, they said that no one can do anything and they are going to be destroyed. The verse said, وَقَالُوا لَا تَخَفْ وَلَا تَحْزَنْ. They said, fear not nor grieve. إِنَّا مُنَجُّوكَ وَأَهْلَكَ. We will surely deliver you and your family. إِلَّا مْرَأَتَكَ. Of course, except your wife, كانت من الغابرين. She shall be of those who stay behind. And of course, the verses of chapter Hud also clearly show that when these evil people were informed of the arrival of the guests of Lut, they came to him and intended to bother him. And actually these guests. But Lut, who had not known the angels, that's why he became very anxious. And he wanted to hinder them from doing that actions. Sometimes with advice, sometimes with threat, sometimes by way of arousing their conscience, saying that, is there not among you one upright man? That's how Prophet actually tried to stop them. He actually, this is really interesting, he actually suggested them to marry his daughters. He said that if you are going to attack my guests, because you're approaching males, I'm going to let you marry my daughter lawfully if you think you have the need in you. But those disgraced people did not accept anything, and they thought only of their own evil aim. But the messengers of Almighty Allah, it was here that they introduced themselves to Prophet Lut. We'll talk about it more in the next episode, God willing. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be sad and bad.